The dares carried out on Who Dares Wins are performed under strict safety supervision. Do not attempt to copy them.
Well, what a way to start the show.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Spinning Yarns. It is episode number 10. And Liam,
the big one, as you would,
the big 10, the big 9 plus 1. You probably guessed from the theme music. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we should use that theme music for every single episode.
Well, it got me pumped, Jace. It really got me excited.
I was a little, you know, not really ready to record and just kind of feeling a little bit blah.
Giving you a bit of a horn, hasn't it?
And then that song came on, Who Dares Wins. I feel excited to talk to you, and the big news is coming. It's Mike Whitney. Today we have a huge Mike Whitney announcement.
Unprecedented announcement.
It's, let's just say, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. But we'll save that for later. We're gonna do the Mike Whitney announcement a little later in the episode. But I'm very excited.
You're filled with nervous excitement.
I am. I truly.
Truly,
it's the first time since I thought there was actually gonna be a purge that I felt this level of nervous excitement. So that's coming a little later down the pipeline. We'll maybe chat a little bit about what's going on in the news. I'm excited. I haven't given a Do You Remember in a few weeks, and I've got one.
It's a zinger, is it?
I think it's a good one. I laughed thinking about it. I laughed out loud, and I don't always do that. So the Do You Remembers are really hard because we started that as kind of a, you know, just a topic that we can talk about to, you know, spin some yarns, so to speak. But you use up your stories really quickly, and it's hard trying to think of new ones. You kind of need to wait and let the moment strike you. And it did. It did this week, and I think it's a good one.
I'm looking forward to hearing it.
So I'm really excited.
That's probably the other thing that we had. We had a few listener mailbags after we spoke about a few of the movies we touched on last week, and you know, asking asking people wanting to hear a few more of the movies that we're watching, or you know, what we've seen. So we might touch on, I've watched another movie this week, which I might touch on as well.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe we'll do a bit of a Spinning Yarns movie review. Maybe that's the hot new segment for the show.
Sounds like it.
We are going to talk to my good friend, Taylor Thompson, the co-founder of Taylor Smith Sustainable Construction here in Portland. We've got his interview coming up. But before, why don't you give us your movie review of the weekly?
All right, I will. So, Sean Penn, fantastic actor, am I correct? You would agree with that statement?
Absolutely.
Yeah, incredible actor. So, I'm not sure if you've seen it or not, Jace, but this, I think, has really, after I rewatched it, has cemented in you know, for me, that this is one of his greatest roles. And that movie I watched is I Am Sam.
Oh, great movie.
Absolutely great movie. Mate, what a tearjerker.
I thought you were going to do... See, when you do like a movie review, I expect, you know, a movie that's just come out. What's in the cinemas right now that I could go and see or available to rent? You've gone deep into the backlog of movies.
Yeah. And pulled out a nugget of gold, mind you, because this movie, if you haven't seen it, you've got to watch it. I mean, I watched it with a heavily pregnant fiance, and, you know, it is a tearjerker, to say the least. Yeah. What was that? Fiance, yeah. Yeah, my heavily pregnant fiance. We watched this movie together, and she was obviously inconsolable at the end of it. I, you know, if I was a lesser man, probably would have shed a few tears as well. But You know, and have you seen the movie? You've seen the movie, obviously.
I've seen it several times. Yeah, it's I love that movie, and it's got a great soundtrack too.
Yeah, so essentially the plot line is Sean Penn plays a father to a young daughter who's actually a young Dakota Fanning, which is weird because I see her in movies now and she's a fully grown woman, so it's strange yeah. seeing her. But you know, you still remember her like as she is in I Am Sam. Great movie. So anyway, the father, he has a he's got a learning disability. You know, he's got the mental capacity of like a 7-year-old, and he gets this woman pregnant, and then he has his daughter, and then the woman leaves, and then he has to fight to keep his daughter
to
get custody and keep his daughter. And it's a great film. And you
Michelle
see
Pfeiffer in that movie.
Yeah, she is. She plays the lawyer. It's actually she's actually really good in it too.
That's right.
And like, oh mate. I actually see a few parallels in it between between myself, I think.
Yeah.
And my daughter.
So do I.
So maybe that's why I enjoyed it so much. I really, really felt that I could relate to Sam in that movie.
I could make some terrible jokes and I'm not going to, but yeah, I do. I see a lot of similarities between I Am Sam and I Am Liam. Yeah.
But that's but if you haven't seen it, get out there and watch it. You know, get a box of Kleenex because it really does it pulls on the heartstrings.
So this is what people can expect if we're going to do like a movie review. It's not your typical movie review. It's more just I saw this movie this week and you should go and see it too. and it could be from any time, any year.
But what you can bank on is that they're going to be great movies.
Yeah, they're going to be great movies. I Am Sam, Shot Caller, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
The list goes on. Wait till we get to Braveheart. That's the one that I'm excited to talk about.
Yeah, actually, yeah, we will get to that because that actually sparks a little bit of a Do You Remember segment in itself. But I'll save that. I'll save that. All right. Well, what we can do now is we can move on. We've got Taylor Thompson on the line and we'll get him on for a bit of a chat. Today's guest is the co-founder of the Portland-based company Taylor Smith Sustainable Construction. He started the company when he was just 26 years old with one of his best mates over here. And they were recently featured in Dwell Magazine's list of best modern homes in the world last year. Taylor Thompson, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks a bunch, guys. Excited to be a part of this.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for coming on.
How you doing? You're in California right now, is that right?
Yeah, doing fantastic. So actually, currently I'm sitting on the back patio of the place that I'm staying for the last few months, just drinking a beer, enjoying the sunset.
What are you drinking, mate? What's your poison at the moment?
Right now I got a Modelo. I feel like
Modelo.
I embrace the culture down here. Right?
What's the weather like in California right now?
At the moment, no clouds in the sky. I want to say it's probably like 65 to 70 out.
In Celsius, Liam, that's got to be...
It's like in the 40s, yeah? No, what am I talking about?
It's more like 20-ish degrees, so it sounds lovely.
It's nice.
Actually.
That actually does sound quite nice. That'd be nice enjoying a few tins.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So tell us a little bit about the company... Taylor Smith, and maybe elaborate a little bit on what you mean when you say sustainable construction.
Sure. So our company, we specialize primarily in accessory dwelling units and small homes. And accessory dwelling units, for those who are unfamiliar with the term, is pretty much like a secondary structure that people are allowed to build on their properties. Mm. Also usually known as like a granny flat or like a mother-in-law flat.
Yeah,
1,000 square feet or less, you know, one bedroom kind of studio setups. So that's kind of our base model. And I guess in terms of our sustainable approach, that kind of platform is our kind of launch pad. Is we encourage people to live in smaller spaces because living in large homes is far and away the most least sustainable way to live. You use up the most amount of energy and consume the most that way.
Yeah.
So that's kind of our first point. And then from there, you know, we really try to push using sustainable technologies, whether that's, you know, solar panels for gathering energy, or radiant floor heating systems, high insulation walls, all those type of things. And then also, I guess the last bit of it is, we came from the large construction world where it's a very wasteful kind of practice,
yeah,
just in general, because there's just so much money and it's so schedule driven that people are very careless in how they build things. That was one of our big things, was like, all right, how can we cut down on the waste that is created during the construction process? Because it's a huge issue.
Do you find that there's a the market, or like the demand for the smaller dwellings, like the granny flats, climbing? I don't know what it's sort of like over there, but
no,
the house prices and stuff in Australia like are so inflated that a lot of people are probably actually getting, you know, pushed towards that scenario. Yeah.
So it's a great question. I would say across kind of the board, like say across America, across the world even, it's not really that thought of. It's not something that people definitely are aware of as much. But fortunately for Portland, the city several years ago started pushing this idea, saying like, okay, how can we combat the housing crisis? Like, how can we get more people into the city without necessarily destroying our really beautiful neighborhoods, without throwing up just mundane kind of boring apartment building next to apartment building? And so that's fortunately become very popular in Portland. And hopefully the world and the rest of America will start to catch on and realize like this is a really great way of allowing urbanization to exist without necessarily destroying the culture of each individual city.
Do you find that the rise of Airbnb has like generated a lot of business for you guys? I feel like people are adding those kind of smaller units on their properties as kind of like second income kind of thing.
Totally. And I mean, it's exactly that. Yeah, it definitely has driven that because people realize like not only could they rent it out full time, but they could also use it half and half, say for like if I want to have my relatives in town, or if my mom, you know, for a lot of like older families, they have say their, you know, their parents or like their grandparents living nearby and want to come visit for 2 months. The other months of the year, they can just Airbnb that, and then it's not just a vacant property.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and then also like you were saying, Liam, about how in Perth there's the housing prices are just through the roof. Like if you're, say, a property owner, but you also want to like maybe make a further investment in property, realizing it's a smart thing to do, like you can't necessarily afford another, you know, $500,000, $800,000 home, where building a $200,000 second unit on your property, that is feasible to create, you know, a second income.
Yeah.
Definitely. What sort of got you started? So what's your background? What made you interested in, you know, getting into design and construction? Obviously you said you both worked in the industry before, but was it a passion that you've always had?
Yeah, definitely. I guess I grew up kind of being around it a bit just in my own household. My dad was always on some project or another, and I was involved one way or another, whether that was just like handing him tools or like actually trying to do something. But like,
grabbing,
I guess that was,
beer.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Me and Jace used to just hand out dad's beers more than anything.
Keep the ice on the beer. More ice on the beers. But I started there, and then, I guess just like kind of started tinkering like in college, just building like little projects of building a bed frame or, you know, shelves and all those other things. And just really kind of started to enjoy working with my hands a lot, of actually like seeing something that you're working on come to physical form in front of you.
And that's because I really, you know, enjoyed woodworking and things like that, but like looking at some of the things on your Instagram, like the houses and the, you know, the homes you build, man, are awesome, you know, like beautiful.
Thank
stunning.
You.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
So I have to ask you, Taylor, because whenever we have a guest come on the show, we usually ask them to send us a little bit of information about themselves and usually a photo or two that we could use for promotional purposes, you know, the logo or a professional headshot or something. You sent us a couple of those things, and then in the batch I'm looking at here is a very, very majestic photograph of you and your partner, Kevin Smith.
A business partner, to be clarified.
And life partners and business partners. Your business partner. Well, I take the name Taylor Smith, and I made an assumption there, but you guys are standing horseback. You've got a ridiculously impressive mustache.
Yeah, that's a great mustache.
By far is the most impressive photo we've seen from any guest we've had on the show.
So. And you were straddling a beautiful white horse.
I'll have to share this.
Please
but
do.
It's a great shot, but how did that photograph come about?
I guess I really don't even know where to begin. But so the easiest part is probably this, that so Kevin's family, so Kevin Smith is my business partner.
Yeah.
And we've been good friends for a very long time. But his family has a ranch out in Central Oregon right next to Bend where they actually house other people's horses. So it's a bit of a stable, I guess, if you will, where they...
Yeah, cool.
His grandma lives out there. His aunt has lived out there. His sister spends a lot of time out there. And so Kevin's family definitely kind of grew up around it. And me, like, I've never really spent a lot of time around horses or anything like that, but I've always been, like, drawn to them. I thought the idea of riding a horse seems like the coolest thing you could ever do.
Exactly. So it was a good, photo op, essentially.
Yeah. So pretty much, like, once Kevin and I became very close friends, I was like, you need to take me out there and teach me how to ride a horse. Like, this is, like, a to-do, like, a bucket list item in my life. So...
Well, man. This is a professional photo.
Yeah, it is a fantastic shot. I'm actually very jealous.
So we've gone out there a few times, and then our other very close friend, Josh, he is quite a talented photographer and has a very nice camera. So we went out there one day, and we were just in Bend for the weekend fucking around. We were like, let's go ride horses for a bit. And it was fortunate that Josh was there because he was able to take some sweet photos for us.
So what I need to do is I need to get Liam over here, come down to the ranch, and we need this exact photo
of me and you
with us as like a cover photo for the podcast. Because I'm so jealous.
I'm sure Kevin would be honored to have you guys out there.
Tell us more. So obviously you're saying you and Kevin have been friends for quite a long while. How did you guys first meet? Any cool stories there?
Yeah. So actually, Kevin and I met in college. As a lot of friends do. Our first meeting is actually kind of ironic, which when most people ask, because they see us now and we're great friends and, you know, everything is very good between us. But, when we first met, we actually both hated each other, which is quite ironic.
Me and Jay still hate each other.
When you get two alphas together, that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Butt heads. It's quite funny because, in college, like, I would say between... Kevin and I, like, he had a very, I guess his house, they partied a lot in his house. And in my house in college, we also partied a lot in my house. Sounds about right, right? we were also both in the engineering programs, but hadn't met each other yet. And kind of like friends would be like, oh, you should meet Kevin. Kevin would be great. And conversely, Kevin was told he should meet me. And the first time I met him, we were having a party at my house, actually. And he showed up just like belligerently drunk and was just like, if you ever met Kevin, he is like a very entertaining, like humorous, like extremely funny, like kind of captures the entire room.
Yeah.
But like sometimes that can be too much when you're not prepared for it, and especially if they're really drunk in your house. And I was like, who is this guy? Like, get this guy out of my house, you know? Like, it's so over it. And then on the opposite side, apparently when we first met, because I was also drinking at that time as well, Kevin said that I was just way too friendly, like asking about him and what he does. And he's like, who's this fucking fake ass dude asking me all these questions, acting like he likes me? Like,
and he's in your house as well.
Yeah, and he's in my house. Yeah. So we parted ways, not necessarily liking each other, but, you know, things changed over time as you realize we're pretty similar. But
the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you go from one, I guess, arch nemesis to friends? But then there's always a point, I guess, you know, to decide to start up a company together in your, you know, mid-20s is a pretty big leap to take. So at what point did you kind of make that decision that you're going to kind of get this done, get it started?
So it was after college, because me and we became, you know, close, really great friends shortly after there in college. We realized we had quite a lot in common and got along well. After college, myself, Kevin, our buddy Josh, and then one other friend, we got a house in Portland together, and just kind of spending that much time together, and we're both in our careers, both just working within or as engineers within the construction world, you know, you'd come home at night and just kind of be over the long days and kind of just daydream on different ideas of like, we should start up a company building storage units. We should start up a company, you know, a coffee shop or, you know, this and that. And I actually eventually got over my job as an engineer. I was kind of like, all right, I know this is my career path for me. I'm going to move into other things. What that is, not sure yet, but I'm going to at least quit my job and go traveling the world until I run out of money and see what I find on the way. So I did that. I ended up traveling for 6 months and I came home broke and I was like, all right, well, got to get back to work now. But during my travels, I kind of like realized that I wanted to be within building, but I knew it wasn't big construction. I knew it was definitely like the residential side of things.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I came back and pretty much searched high and low looking for companies to work for. And I actually found this small company who was also building ADUs, kind of introduced me to that entire world. And so I built 3 homes for this company and it was like great experience. And I expected it to kind of keep going. So I guess one backstory to that is I knew eventually I wanted to own my own company, especially doing residential stuff. But I was like, all right, that's way down the line. I need to, you know, get a lot of experience, kind of learn the trade. And so that was why I sought out those home building companies. And after working for this guy for 6 to 8 months or so, and we built 3 homes, he was just like, you know what? I'm over this. I'm shutting down the shop. Like I'm over construction. I was like, what? Like, we have the great thing going here. Like, you know, I'm the project manager, we're building homes. But with that closing down, it's kind of like, all right, I'm back at another crossroad again. Like, do I go back out to the world or do I choose something else? And I kind of thought about it and I was like, you know what? I could run that company better than he could.
Yeah.
And he was successful at it. So like Kevin and I had already been kind of still continuing to talk about, you know, would we ever do something together? And it kind of just like the timing all aligned where it's like, you know what? This opportunity landed on our lap. Like, let's take a leap of faith. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. Now here you are.
and then we took the leap and it worked and it's working thus far.
Well, that's actually what I noticed when I was in Portland, man. Like over here in Australia, like all the houses are like double brick, you know, like Colorbond roof sheeting and things like that. And then when I was in Portland and it was actually the house next door to where the PDX core site or whatever was getting built. And it's all like completely like constructed from wood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like everything. And that I've never seen that ever in Australia. And I was like, holy shit, I would love to come over there and to do like, you know, to become a carpenter. If you learnt the trade, building houses as a carpenter there, you know, like you're just going to have so much more experience. Like to build a house essentially from scratch out of wood just seems so out there and foreign, but so awesome at the same time. Like
that's so interesting.
It fully spun me out. Because Chippy's over here essentially like hang door frames and like do, you know, roof carpentry and, you know, obviously there's more than that, but definitely not.
Second. Do you call carpenters Chippies?
Yeah.
I'm for sure going to use that on the job site. We need to get ourselves a Chippy out of here. What?
Yeah, do we call carpenters are Chippies, electricians are Sparkies.
Yeah, I know Sparkies.
What else do we call?
Well, it's like a plumber.
A
shitty.
Oh no!
Yeah, that should catch on.
Shitty. Oh god! I'm trying to think of other funny nicknames we call trades over here. Boilermakers, we just call them mad cunts.
Liam's a boilermaker. I don't even know if it's called a boilermaker in America.
It should be. Yeah, what do they call them? A steel worker, I suppose. Yeah, in America. Yeah, boilermaker.
Is that what you do, Liam?
Oh, it's that's my trade. Yeah, yep. Don't do that at the moment. But yeah,
hard work, man.
Yeah. No, it's good. Well, that's, you know, I originally liked I like building things as well, but I really liked woodwork, and then things got in, you know, as they move on and stuff. I ended up into the steel working industry for a while. So yeah,
it's
cool.
Yeah, I'm a lot better with computers than I am with tools. Jason went down a different path.
Hey, we all have our expertise, Jason. It's all good. I'm worthless on a computer, so you're fine. Room for both of us.
Yeah, it worked that well. I'm the tech guy and Liam's the head of security. So we got best of both worlds.
That's perfect.
Together, it's like the perfect storm.
So what kind of advice would you give to someone, Taylor, if they're in a similar position to you where they've, you know, they're not maybe very happy in their job, but, you know, they don't know if they should start a new business? I feel like a lot of people say, let's start a business together or a company together, but then there's a big gap from saying that to literally going ahead and doing it.
Totally.
If you had to give some advice to someone in that position, what would it be?
I mean, the main piece of advice I would give for it, because it's something that I definitely relied on heavily when I first did it, was like, if it fails, you're never going to be worse off than you are right now, because it's like, you're successful already in what you're doing because you have a job. So like, if you try something better and it fails, like, you at least have that to come back to, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's like, really, it's a catch net for you. So
I
feel like the risk that people put into, or the fear that people have into like taking a risk of starting a company, is they're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to fail. And then I don't know what I'm going to do. But it's like, if you fail, it'd be just the same as like, what if you got fired from your job tomorrow? Like, you'd be almost worse off than you are if you had tried starting a company.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah.
And then my other advice would be prepared to work really hard. Like, that's the other part that I feel like people sometimes see, like, the glamour of like, oh, I'm a company owner and like everything is so great and peachy. But like, it's a lot of long days and it's a lot of like sacrificed hours on times when you're not necessarily wanting to do that. So
yeah, it's not like a regular job. You kind of clock in at 9, clock out at 5, and then, you know, leave everything at work.
Well, that's right.
You're always working on something.
Well, when you have that drive, when you're working for yourself, you know, I suppose that, you know, the more you put in, the more you get out, sort of scenario. So you're more willing to do that. Well, you know, if you want to be successful, I suppose you have to be willing to do it.
Yeah, definitely. And the motivation helps a lot. You know, it's like we were talking about it the other day of some laborers that are buddies of ours that were working on the job site with us, just doing some manual labor and demolition with us. And you know, like Kevin and I, when we're in there, we're like, we absolutely are busting ass. Like, we're sweating, we're working fucking hard. We're like, we're going to get this done because we care to get this done.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes we'll be like, God, why aren't these guys working hard? They're fit, they're active, like they're happy to be here, the sun's shining. Like, how can we get them to work harder? And we kind of like, we're talking with an older guy who'd worked in construction. He's like, you guys, you're not like, this isn't their company. They don't have anything invested in this game. And so like, for them, yes, it's work, but they're not like, they don't go at home at night and think about the job site. You know, they go home and that's their home away from work is their life. Yeah.
Well, you're getting, you're getting paid by the project and they're getting paid by the hour. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You'd hate to see the progress we make on building sites in Australia, mate. I don't know if you have, the Smoko in America.
No, what is that?
Smoko.
Smoko.
You don't know what Smoko is.
Oh, mate. You explain the Smoko.
The Smoko, it's like the break you have between like getting to work and your lunchtime. Like an afternoon tea.
It's like
a
morning tea or an afternoon.
You go out and have a smoke.
Got it.
It typically is you go and have a smoke and you have a bit of a break.
Talk
but
shit.
But Smoko can, it's mysterious in that it can be called at any point during the day. It's like, I'm going on a Smoko. And you can't argue with someone going on a Smoko. It's like, don't mess with him. He's on Smoko right now. He'll be back in 10 minutes.
Listen to it. Do yourself a favor and go and listen to a song called Smoko by The Chats.
Yeah, I'll put a link up. It's a great
The Chats. Is it on? Is it going to be on Spotify if I look it up?
You'd be on YouTube.
Be.
I don't know.
Definitely.
It'd definitely be on YouTube.
I'll find it
by
on
The Chats. Yeah, it's called Smoko, and that it's pretty self-explanatory once you've seen that.
All right. If anybody calls a Smoko on my job site, I will tell them absolutely not.
Exactly.
Oh God. Well, on that note. We should probably take a little bit of a Smoko.
Fair.
But Taylor, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time and sitting out there on the deck with a beer and chatting with us. And
tough stuff, you know.
Tough gig.
Absolutely, man. I'm honored to be a part of the show, guys. I couldn't be more excited to chat with y'all. It was fun.
Cool. Thanks very much, mate.
Taylor Thompson is the co-founder of Taylor Smith Sustainable Construction, and you can follow along with their projects on their Instagram page at TaylorSmithSC or TaylorSmithSC.com. Taylor, mate, thanks a lot. It's been great.
Thanks again, guys.
Cheers. All right. Thanks, mate.
See you later.
Bye.
See ya.
All right, Liam, it's Do You Remember time. Do you remember?
I'm looking forward to this one, Jace. You've really tantalized my taste buds for a Do You Remember after your intro, so I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Yeah, I'm with any time we do this Do You Remembers, I don't know if it's going to go for 20 minutes or 3 minutes because you start going down the rabbit hole and you know you never know where it's going to go. So the I don't tangents. Know if this is going to be a long unraveling story like a lot of our like a lot of our ones, but maybe it will be. So
like our podcast in general.
Yeah. Exactly. So I want to actually throw it back here for a Do You Remember to Do You Remember when you and I first met? And you may not, actually, because it goes back many, many years. But one of my good friends, Jared Bowen, went to school with you before I went to school with you.
Mm-hmm.
And we were probably in ninth grade, year nine.
Yeah, I think it must have been. Yeah, it would have been.
And so Jared came over to my house, and what me and Jared used to do is we had cheap $10 skateboards from Coles. and Coles actually sold skateboards at this time.
Yeah,
and they didn't go very fast, so we took the wheels off of our rollerblades and put them on our skateboards, and there was a huge
ABEC sevens.
ABEC sevens, if you're familiar with the ABEC rating system of
terminology
of bearings, ABEC threes, I think being the lowest, China Bone reds being the most extreme. But I think ABEC nines, I'm pretty sure they were ABEC
nines.
Yeah,
I think they did go up, yeah.
Quite slick. And there was a huge hill behind my house. And this is another thing, that when you're a kid and you're in school, you'll fucking bomb hills on any machine that has wheels, whether it's a bike or a skateboard or a rollerblade.
It doesn't hurt to fall off
and
when
really
you're
just not care about it. I would not do this now, ever. Oh, there's no way you could convince me to go down this hill on a skateboard again. But we would go down. Jared would come over and we'd kind of go through the alleyway. And there's a footpath that is very steep, and then it flattens out. It's kind of a cul-de-sac, and then it goes really steep again. It's
two hills.
It's two hills. The road goes all the way down.
In close succession.
Yeah. It's a quiet street, thankfully, but we had come over and we were saying, you know, how intense the rollerblade wheels were. And I actually had my rollerblades as well, separately to that. So we had wheels on our skateboards, but I actually had my rollerblades there that we would bomb.
Just in case. You always have the blades on hand in case you need to do a quick strip down and get a quick rip down the beachfront.
Yeah, all right. So leading up to this, a little bit of backstory, I thought you were the coolest dude ever because you had this big white boy afro. I'll find a photo and put it in the Facebook banner this week. And some like baggy jeans. You had like etnies on.
That's cool,
like,
man. That's cool, bro.
You have an SMP belt that you pull it through and it hangs down. You know, that's... But the coolest thing,
I was styling, pretty much.
Absolutely. And the coolest thing about you, Liam, was, if you remember, at that time, the mobile phones that we used to have were the Nokias, the 3315s, 3210s. And what you could do with those is you could completely take the casing off and put on, you know...
Yeah, you'd mod it up.
Bright colors... Or, you know, images or, you know, brand names. You know, you could get a Billabong cover for your phone or whatever it was.
You'd trick out your phone, if you will.
You'd pimp your phone. You can't really do that anymore.
I guess you can't.
You can do hundreds of thousands of other things on your phone, but you can't swap out the case.
That's right.
Anyway, you showed us, like, your little back alley deal. You had a cover on your phone. That was a naked lady. and it was... I hadn't seen many... no naked ladies at that point in my life. So this was like a very fascinating and intriguing thing. And you were very proud of it. You just bought this naked lady cover for your phone.
Yeah, well, because I had to be 18 to buy it. And they sold it to me when I was only 14.
your afro and the bum fluff on your chin was enough to get you that. So fast forward, we're bombing down this hill on our skateboards and our rollerblades, and you kind of stepped up to the plate. Because we were saying you can go down the skateboard, but you go down the rollerblades, it is fucking intense. Like, you go too fast. You definitely would have to start... You'd have to start at the top of the cul-de-sac and just roll down. Like, you couldn't go from the top of the footpath down the steep hill, flatten out on the cul-de-sac, and then act down the real hill because you'd have way too much speed. You basically just said, challenge accepted. Like, it's something to...
Well, I was expecting at first that you would have a few knee pads and maybe the hand braces with the hard plastic in the palms.
The wrist guards. No, I didn't. So you agreed to go down on the rollerblades from the top of the footpath, down the steep footpath, onto the top of the cul-de-sac and down the hill. And me and Jared were shocked at the balls on this guy. So we strap you in, you're up the top, we're sitting there watching you come down. And you picked up a lot of speed quickly. Like, well, I'd see your face change when you were like,
well, I tucked,
oh,
mate.
Shit.
That was my first, when I first at the very top, I tucked. You know, when you see the speed skaters, when the skiers put the skis underneath their armpits.
Yeah. Head down, ass up is basically what he did. You were head down, ass up.
Locked the feet in the French fry position.
In the aero stream. Slipstream, and you come down the hill, you level out a little bit, you've got a lot of speed, and your afro is like flailing in the wind behind you, and one thing you can't do is decide to bail out, because once you decide to bail out, you're completely screwed. But you knew, I've got this much speed, if I continue to go down this hill, I probably will die. So you ran off onto somebody's lawn rollerblades, and you kind of put your foot down as if, like, that's the thing about rollerblades is you can't put your foot down to stop.
You have to
try. You're on a bike or a skateboard and you put your foot down, at least you know you're going to hit solid earth.
Essentially, if you can't run as fast as you were rollerblading, you're in some serious trouble.
There's a momentum shift that occurs there. So you hit this grass and your legs are moving in a circular motion. They're hitting the ground and then they're coming up past your shoulders. And
think Roadrunner.
Think exactly the Roadrunner. And then you run out of grass because you're going to hit this brick-paved driveway. And so you go down and you hit the fucking ground and you are tumbling around on the brick paving. But the most shocking thing about it, and this is how I knew that you were bad to the bone, if that was me and I'm hitting this brick paving at that speed, I'm going to cover my head, okay? That's the most important part. You did not cover your head, because what you were mostly worried about was the naked lady phone case in your pocket. So you've got two hands on your right pocket protecting your phone case, and you were fucking thrashing. Your head is smashing over and over on the ground. I thought you were dead. Oh my god. That is the funniest shit.
I didn't have a lot back in.
Are you lost? Not a lot to live for. Jesus. A lot of brain cells. The only reason that you're not dead, and I'm convinced of this, is the curly, thick layer of padding that is the afro that you snapped must have somehow absorbed the shock of hitting the ground that hard. But that was the funniest and scariest shit I think I've ever seen. And from that point forward, that's it. We were
best friends. We knew we had hit something special. Oh, far out, mate. That is a good one. I actually get a bit of a migraine coming back thinking about that. Yeah, I don't think I ever fully recovered from that issue after that day.
You were much smarter before then than you ever have been in like the 10 years since.
It was sort of the equivalent of when Ralph Wriggum puts the crayon up his nostril. Or was that Homer?
Homer did as a child. That's right. And then they found it when he was like a that was
my
man.
That was my crayon moment, I feel.
That was your crayon moment. So that's my Do You Remember. I thoroughly enjoyed that moment in my life, and I'm really
appreciative re-listening to it.
To have this show so I can relive these kind of things.
That was a really good one. I'm glad you remembered that one.
So we'll move on. We'll do the... Everyone's been waiting for the Mike Whitney update.
Oh, it sends shivers up my spine even thinking about thinking about this right now.
Okay, so here's the deal. We've been trying to get Mike Whitney on our show for the last 9 episodes. We're on episode 10 now. And we didn't want to ask him to come on because we wanted to grow to the point where we were big enough that he heard about us, and then he came to us and approached us and came on the show, and that would be a sign that we had made it. We made a decision a couple of weeks ago that maybe we should just reach out to Mike Whitney's publicist and see if we can get him on the line.
Let's flip the script on Mike Whitney, though.
And so we the big announcement, and I feel like I need a drum roll or something here, but we landed an interview with Australia's favourite left-arm bowler turned reality TV host, Mike Whitney. He's a former host of such beloved Aussie TV classics as Who Dares Wins and Australian Gladiators, and he also played cricket. And we got an interview with him earlier in the week. We called him up. We spoke to his publicist first and got his number, and we managed to get him on the line. So what I'm going to do is we'll play you that audio. We recorded that. We'll go back and we'll play it back to you now. And I'm hoping that everyone is as excited as we are about this, because
this is a big moment.
It is fantastic. So I guess there's nothing else to do but to do it, Liam.
Let's jump straight into it, mate. Let's do it.
All right. Here we go.
All right. So Mike Whitney doesn't know it yet, but we've spoken to his publicist earlier in the week, and he's told us that Mike hates doing public interviews these days. So we've got his phone number right now. We're going to get Mike on the line, and let's see what he has to say. Hello? Is this Mike Whitney?
I am Mike Whitney from Who Dares Wins. How you doing, mate?
Doing well, thanks, mate. It's Liam and Jace here with the Spinning Yarns podcast. We spoke to your publicist earlier in the week, and he's agreed to stitch you up a little bit and get you on for an interview with our show.
How does that sound
to you?
Now, something like that, I reckon, is worth $100.
Classic, Mike. We don't actually pay our guests, mate. But should we just get it started? We'll just take it from the top.
Okay.
Okay, so we're very excited to announce our next guest. You may remember him from such beloved Aussie TV classics as Who Dares Wins and Australian Gladiators. Also played cricket. He's an absolute Aussie icon. We've been waiting forever for this moment. Mike Whitney, welcome to the show, mate.
G'day, I'm Mike Whitney, and I've got a question for you.
Okay. All right. Usually with an interview, we will ask the questions... not the other way around, but
shoot. Sure. Let's hear it.
You want to get undressed in public for $50?
I don't think so, Mike. I don't really want to get undressed for $50. I don't think that's a fair trade.
Now, something like that, I reckon, is worth $100.
Yeah. even for $100, I don't... Let's just move on. Yeah, we've gone in the wrong direction. Should we just take it from the top, Mike?
Okay. I am Mike Whitney from Who Dares Wins. How you doing, mate?
doing really well, mate. Yeah, we're just really excited to have you on the show. This has been a long time coming for us.
A long time. The people have been wanting this interview, mate. We've had non-stop... Yeah, messages and phone calls, and yeah, everybody's excited to hear what you got to say.
I'm just absolutely stoked, man. It's fantastic.
So are we. So I got to ask you, Mike, we spoke about you because you were in the news recently about there was a guy who told us that when he was only 10 years old, he asked you for an autograph, and you you turn around and verbally abused him. Have you?
What actually? I want to hear your story, though, Mike. I want to hear your side of that story, and you know, and see what you have to say about it.
Nasty boy.
Nasty boy. Oh. Okay, so do you want to elaborate? What actually happened? How did that experience kind of pan out?
What was it
like?
Very tough and very physical.
Ooh.
Wow. I think we'll just move. 10-year-old boy.
let's move on from there, I think. So I hear you'll be filming an upcoming segment for the Sydney Weekender in Bali, mate. You must be pretty excited for that, eh?
It's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun, mate. Bali.
Bali is a lot of fun. Yeah. I would recommend, mate, if you're over there, try some of that authentic Balinese street food.
That nasi goreng.
Yeah, right off the carts and don't go to the restaurants. Go to the guys in the street that cook it up there right in front of you.
Mate, I'm a little bit concerned about the runs.
Yeah, that's Bali Belly. Bali Belly.
We've all been there, mate. Go back and have a listen to the episode. Episode, what was it, Jace? What's the name of the episode? Problem number two.
Oh, problem number two. Yeah, Liam had a bit of Bali Belly. Just upset belly, I guess.
You probably actually already listened to it, mate. I'm assuming you've listened to a few of our podcasts by now.
No.
Someone would have mentioned it to you. We mention you in every episode. No one's even said you should check this out or anything like that.
No.
Come on, Mike. Oh, you're a larrikin, mate. You're a true larrikin. Let's talk about your cricketing days, mate. So obviously you made a huge impact on the cricket pitch, and why do you think Australians fell in love with you so much, you know, on the cricket?
I'm a fast bowler.
Yeah, you are a fast bowler. Absolutely. And I guess we've had a lot of fast bowlers, famous Australian fast bowlers in the cricket world.
Just Shane bowlers Warren, in general. Yeah.
Dennis. Yeah. So how, I'd be curious to know, Mike, how you think you stack up to those guys.
How do you rate yourself?
All right, number one.
Definitely number one in our books, mate.
That's right. So another question, the burning question now, Mike, which I think everybody wants to get an answer to, and we've got to ask you about Tanya Zaida.
Okay.
So it's been, obviously would have been pretty exciting to work with her. And I think most of Australia had a crush of her back in the Who Dares Win days. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let us know. What do you think, mate? I mean, tell us, did anything ever, you know, happen between you two?
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Be honest. How long have you and Tanya Zaida been having a bit of a fling?
For well over 10 years now.
You dirty bastard.
Okay.
Hey! It's my man! Alright!
That's quite a celebration. Must feel good to get that off your chest, mate.
Now that's what I call wow!
Wow. Oh, God. You're a bad man.
You're a live wire, mate.
So, Mike, putting that aside, and I'm very proud of you because Tanya Zaida is, not to be confused with Catherine Zeta-Jones, by the way, but I got to ask you, Mike, we've spoken about this on the show. I've tried every single way imaginable to get my hands on a pair of Bondi Mike Whitney Selection sunglasses. Website keeps having errors, and I'm starting to think that you just don't even have any sunglasses in stock. What's the deal there, mate?
We definitely ain't got none.
You bastard.
You bastard.
All right, Mike. Well, thank you so much for coming on today and being a guest on our podcast. It's just, we can't tell you how much it means to
us. It's been awesome, mate.
Yeah, really, just big moment for us, really.
Now, something like that, I reckon, is worth $100.
Well, we have already said that we don't pay guests,
mate.
So unfortunately, I mean, I'm not sure if there's anything else we could do to kind of show our appreciation, but But we don't really have the funds right now to
give
do
me
that.
A job.
All right, mate. Yeah, it's a bit of a two-man operation at this point.
we can't really offer you a job. We actually don't get paid anyway. So, but anytime you want to come back on, you could
just let us know.
More than welcome. So thanks a lot, mate, and we really appreciate it.
Mate, it's been relaxing. It's been fantastic.
All right, folks. So, there it is. We did it. 10 episodes in. 10 weeks ago.
What a great way to celebrate the 10th episode by actually having the man himself on.
We started this as two starry-eyed young men just trying to make it out there in the podcast world. 10 weeks later, we could honestly, this could be our last episode ever and I'd be happy. It's not our last episode ever. We're going to keep doing them. We're going to reach for bigger and better stars. Maybe we could get Tanya Zeta. Not to be confused with Catherine Zeta-Jones. But the sky's the limit. I don't know what else to do now. I feel like we've pursued this man for so long.
I'm still in shock that we actually had Mike Whitney on the show. But in saying that, Jace, the only person who could potentially even hold a candle for Mike Whitney would be the internet sensation himself. The man, the myth. You may know him from classics such as Medical Mondays and...
What Me Eat Wednesday.
The man himself, Maccabee.
So what a great segue, Liam, to our preview for next week. We have... You may remember this man from his most famous YouTube video, Kukumba.
He is so hot right now.
He is the hottest man on the internet. He's a Jamaican. I think he's Jamaican.
Well, he sounds Jamaican. He's actually Jamaican. I think
he lives in England.
He's had hundreds of millions of YouTube views. He rhymes about
fresh fruit and eating vegan and cucumbers and mangoes and all this kind of stuff. And we actually have Liam secured him for an interview on next week's episode,
which is. This man has managed to rack up tens of millions of views. Well, I think it'd probably almost be closer to 100 million views if you put all the different channels together.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the Kukumba video alone has over 100 million views.
Yeah. It's going to be incredible. So we've got Maccabee coming on and we're going to have a chat with him.
So I know we said we're going to speak about the news this week, but I think what other news is there to have Mike Whitney on the show? That consumed our entire week. So no, we're not going to do. We'll have a look at the news next week. So tune in next week. We're going to have Maccabee, the man himself. He may even do a bit of a rhyme for us live on air. I don't know. We haven't asked him yet, but he'll be on the show. We'll have a look at the news next week. We'll probably have another Do You Remember. It's going to be a great 11th episode. But Liam, could pat yourself on the back, mate. It's been a lovely 10
We've
episodes.
Done it. We've made it.
You see, you set goals and then you achieve them.
That's right.
So, we've proven that.
Shoot for the stars.
Shoot for the stars.
What do they say? Aim for the moon because you just land among the stars if you miss.
All right. Well, thank you, Liam.
Thanks, mate.
If you're listening and you really enjoy the show, please head over to our iTunes page. Leave us a 5-star review. We don't accept anything less than 5 stars. So if you're thinking 4 stars, forget about it.
Yeah, keep it to yourself.
Leave us a review. Give us a little comment on there. Hit subscribe. And we'll be back next week. Thanks a lot, Liam.
Thanks, mate. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye. I got to find you.